My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times.
Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. I'm Jill Coyle, your host, and I have a special guest with me today. Her name is Stephanie Anderson. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you. Grateful to be here.
I'm really excited about this episode because, as you guys know, it's November and we are talking about cultivating gratitude. And me and Stephanie want to talk about this because this is something that we don't think about a lot when we're going through a trial, especially a divorce, which is my area of expertise. We want to think about all the bad things that are happening. And if we really were to sit down and evaluate, you know, the everything, we would be able to find things that really are, I guess, silver linings or, you know, things that you can show that you could be grateful for. So we're going to talk about that today. Steph, I'm going to introduce you so my listeners kind of know where you are and who you are. So Stephanie is a mother of three, married to a kind and gentle man, and doing her best to live in light and love. She has a BA in psychology, a second BA in recreation therapy, is certified in guided imagery, and is certified, help me, Kundalini?
Kundalini yoga.
Oh my gosh, I almost said it right. Mm-hmm. Kundalini yoga instructor. With the intention of helping people progress into a healthier state of mind and being, Steph intuitively facilitates clients in her yoga and mediation practice, her therapeutic guided imagery, and energy balancing, which I want to talk about all of those. So these models work to remove old patterns, habits, and thoughts from the subconscious mind, in turn allowing healing, change, and growth. Her goal is to serve you, your needs, and help you progress on your personal journey to light, truth, and love.
Yeah.
Wow. What a great show. And it was so funny because when I was reading and getting ready for this episode today, the first thing I thought about was yoga. And I thought, well, that's not me at all. You know, yoga is like one of those things that I always, you know, you hear about that it's very good for you. And I'm like the scaredest person, like I'm not flexible. I can't touch my toes. I have always been that in my life. So yoga is one of those things I'm like, I just can't do it, which I know you're going to tell me otherwise. So anyway, Steph, welcome to the show. I really am excited to get to know you. And that's kind of the lead in. I just want to kind of hear your story a little bit of how you decided to like really get to where you are today.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you. I'm grateful to be here for a few reasons. One, it takes a significant amount of trust to invite someone to talk or share insight about things. And so I'm grateful for your trust. And also, this is a learning process for me as much as anyone else. And so I'm just grateful for that opportunity to be here. So thank you. You make me laugh. Yoga was not my thing either. I spent most of my teenage and early adulthood thinking yoga was boring and silly. And I liked the high-paced, high-energy exercise. But as I delved into this world, I learned that yoga has, yes, it's a form of exercise, but that's not its intention or purpose. The actual definition of yoga is to unite and to become one, and essentially you becoming one with your highest self, you becoming and embodying your soul or your spirit. And so that's what the intention of yoga is. And so when we think of it as an exercise and a form of getting stronger or more flexible, that's great. That works for some people. But the, you know, yoga is finding who you are at a divine level, at a spiritual level.
I love that. And because you do hear a lot about like yoga being able to be a therapeutic setting for people that really need to, you know, like there's a lot of things that people talk about what it can do for your mind, body, and soul. So I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
I get told all the time with my high stressful job and, you know, being a mom, I should do it because it would be a really good way of combining a lot of, I guess, self-helps for me. But so tell me about your journey. So what got you here?
Yeah. So when I married my husband 12 years ago, my life changed in a positive way that I didn't know about until now. You know, sometimes that hindsight helps. But I had married a really great man who loved me unconditionally. And I felt like that might have been the first time I hadn't pretended to be someone to be loved, right? And that changed my life. And I began to slowly awaken from kind of not being self-aware. And in this process of being married and so forth, I went to a doctor because I was having some health problems and there just was not an answer. And I kept seeking and there was just no answer. And quite frankly, I had some really negative experiences with healthcare. And I was like, there's got to be another way. And I delved into alternative holistic healthcare. And it really worked for me. Trapped emotions in the body began to release. And I began to heal and feel really good. And it was surprising. And this is when kind of self-awareness began developing. And in this process of becoming more self-aware of my emotions and my thoughts and who I was, I began to realize that I had the ability to help people as well intuitively with energy or emotions. And I began seeking out other holistic practices. And that's when, you know, Kundalini yoga fell into my lap. Therapeutic guided imagery fell into my lap, and I was using these tools for myself, and they worked so well at centering, balancing, bringing peace and calm. They worked so well that I began to use them with the people that I was working with energy. So people might come to my house and I'd help them balance their energy. And then I'd like, you want to try this meditation I've been learning? And people also had significant benefits as well. And so I decided to be trained in Kundalini yoga and guided imagery, breath work. I play the gong. I use a lot of art as well at retreats or workshops, just because all the different tools that I use will access the subconscious mind or the nervous system and the glandular system at different ways and different levels, just bringing about a really great whole and complete healing. So as I used the tools, I began to use them with clients. And then, and that's where I'm at today. I'm still learning tools for myself. And then I use them as I learn and grow. And what works for me, I continue to work with others. And it's been absolutely lovely. I love watching people make changes that are heart-centered, not fear-based. I love watching people step into who they truly are as a divine soul and to embrace themselves and begin to give themselves self-love for all the things they have accomplished rather than focusing on what they haven't done or who they aren't. My job is to help people know who they actually are and focus on that aspect and grow the beautiful parts of themselves.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I wrote this book, you know, same title as my No One Dies from Divorce. And, you know, in my job, a lot of what I have done is, you know, I'm a therapist along as an attorney and advocate. Mm-hmm. So in one of my chapters, one of my last chapters, I wrote a chapter called Breathe, Learn, and Grow. And I talked about the importance of breath and breath control and being able to understand, you know, that in the moment of emotion, our body sometimes doesn't want to breathe, but it's mind over matter. And it's something that we can teach ourselves. It's something we can stop. We can close our eyes and we can control our breathing and the power behind that. And, and so I love that because there's been so many studies. You can go research it. You probably know a lot of it about the power of breathing. And the ability for our bodies to heal or start to heal by just recognizing that, stopping, and then taking a breath. And when we're going through hard things, sometimes it feels like we can't even breathe. Like we can't move. You know, I've had so many people talk about how they've just been on the floor and they didn't know if they were ever going to get up. And so I always say, you know, you got to walk before you run. You've got to crawl before you walk. You've got to breathe before you crawl. And so that's the most important thing you can do. So I love that. That's kind of, you know, like the focus of your therapy and your coaching is first starting there because it's so important. And I'm also a big advocate of people understanding that when you take small breaths, like, okay, then you can, you know, you get your ability to calm down and you able to get your mind more in a set of being able to make, you know, more rational decisions. And it's just those small things that start moving you toward being able to make really good progress. So I just wanted to kind of like throw that back to you. Like, how have you seen, you know, teaching proper breathing techniques to other people have really, you know, the, I guess the benefits of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Breath work is so powerful. In yogic teachings, it is said that when, or the breath controls the mind. And so if we're not conscious of our breath and we're not paying attention to what's going on with our breath, then our mind is going wherever it wants to go, right? And so when you can become a master of the breath, then you become the master of your mind. And how simple is it to actually become aware of the breath? It's so simple, right? I'm breathing in, I'm breathing out, you know, and just paying attention to that breath, starting small, just as small as that. I'm inhaling, I'm exhaling. Okay, there it is. You know, and that's just the first step to becoming the master of the mind. And so I love that teaching because I've seen it in my life. When I go to my breath, like you said, emotions begin to dissolve because when we're in an emotional state, the emotions take over our breath. And the reality is we want our breath to be the part that wins, right? The part that's taking over. And so, so that's a lovely teaching. Another piece to breath work, which I love to teach to people, is that when we're breathing from our chest, when we're breathing in the upper part of our chest, this alone causes anxiety. Forget about your thoughts. Forget about your to-do list. Forget about your fears. Just breathing from the chest will cause anxiety. So it's really important to be able to learn how to breathe and expand the belly. Counterculture to what our world thinks, like suck in your belly. Nope, absolutely not. Let it hang out, right? Like when you're breathing, allow the belly to come out and then come back in. And that in and of itself will begin to reduce anxiety. We don't even have to go do therapy and inner child work or whatever else, trauma therapy. Just start with the breath and that will begin to make massive changes in what's going on around you.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, if you've never done this and you're thinking, how does this work? I mean, think about it, like world-class athletes, like do specific trainings on breathing, like runners, like if you want to be a marathon runner, like your breathing is more important than the way that your form of your run, both important, but breathing's important. Swimming. I mean, understanding the importance of a breath, being able to inhale fully. So, I mean, it's got so many connotations to it that really can help you meet to the next level of, I would say, every part of your body.
Absolutely.
And push you to that. One of the things I love about breath, and this is funny because when I was a kid, I used to be scared sometimes of going to sleep thinking that I would stop breathing. I don't know if that's just like, I mean, I'm not an anxious person. I don't have anxiety, but I remember as a kid thinking that, like, if I just don't breathe, will I stop breathing? And, you know, as I've gotten older, I've obviously, I don't have that fear anymore. And I understand that the best part about our bodies is our body will breathe whether you think about it or not.
Right.
And I love to use that metaphorically for you within your trial, because at the, your body will do the work for you even when you feel like you can't. And we're obviously talking about going to a different level and being able to then rein in and elevate that breathing. But at the end of the day, if you're just feeling like you can't move forward, guess what? Your body will do it for you. And that's pretty powerful. And that's should give you comfort. We should be grateful for the fact that we don't have to think to breathe. Our body will do it for us.
Absolutely. And you bring up a great point, that unconscious breath, because it will constantly, your body will constantly do its job constantly. And when you become conscious of that, that's when you begin to train your body and mind to become conscious. That's the whole process of becoming conscious, is your body's going to do it by itself. But if you become conscious of it, then you begin to rein in the mental capacity to become conscious of your emotions, conscious of your thoughts, conscious of your reactions, if that makes sense. And yes, the breath is powerful. It's the breath of life, right? It's what gives your body life. It's what gives your soul life. It's that powerful. Yeah.
So if I was to say, let's just do a quick breathing, like, let's do a breathing exercise for all of our people listening.
Let's do it. So for those who'd be new, I'd place a hand on my belly, right? So you sit up nice and tall with a spine that is straight, your shoulders that are down, because you want to have the capacity to breathe, not hunched over. So your spine is straight, and you place your hand on your belly and you begin to breathe in a way that your hand comes out and in. So just noticing the breath. And if your hand is not coming out and in and your chest is coming out and in, regulate it. Find a way to open up. I like to say you're pouring water into a pitcher. It's going to go to the bottom first. So you're going to imagine the breath coming in the bottom of the lungs. It's going to push the diaphragm and open up the stomach, open up the belly, right? And then as you exhale, you're going to draw the belly in. And then the chest will come in. And so you just sit there with your hand on your belly, feeling the breath coming in and feeling the breath going out, just paying attention. And you can sit there for 3 minutes, and just this simple conscious breath will begin to change the mental thoughts. There's so many other things that we could go into, but that is a real simple, simple step.
And it, by just putting your hand there, it refocuses you to do, you know, to think about what you're doing. So my son, do you have kids?
I do. Yeah. Three.
Yeah. So I have four kids, and I realize as they get older, they're all very, very different. And I think parenting back in the day was more of just like addressing all your kids the same way and then hoping that they're okay.
Yes.
Which is why therapists make some, you know, they have,
that's
a lot
why
of
we're all in this
right now. So now, you know, I don't want to be that parent. I want to really focus on the needs of each of my individual children. So my third son, he's 7 and a half. He struggles with sensory issues. So he gets really heightened emotions very quickly. And one of the best things we did was occupational therapy, which for kids, I would recommend for anybody that's struggling with this. But they did so much breathing work, and they taught us so much breathing work. And I just can't tell you how well it has worked on my son when he wants to now get to an emotional place that isn't maybe warranted.
Yeah.
We talk about the volcanoes, you know, like he wants to have a ginormous volcano and it's a small issue. So, and, you know, they talk about the breathing, and they put up their hand and they just say, okay, we're going to breathe. as we trace our hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just that focus on my 7-year-old who, you know, doesn't focus on anything for very long, gets him into a mindset of being able to regulate and calm himself down. And, we did about a year of that. And now it is something that he can almost do himself. So like we see him going there, we say, Pat, we say his name, and then he's like already like, so anyways, I'm a true believer of the understanding of breath and being able to recenter it to be able to then regulate our emotions. Cause I agree with you. Like, I'm like hot. Like, I'm like so emotional. Like, I'm like this, you know, mm-hmm. I want to get angry fast. I want to get sad fast. And then I want to be over it and I want to move forward. Yes. And so, even as my adult being, I've been able to get to a place where I don't have to have these levels of emotions because I'm able to recenter myself. It's just important. I mean, when we're going through crap in life, which everybody that's listening to my podcast, most of them are going through.
Well, we all do. Everyone does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just small things like this. You guys, you don't have to spend a lot of money to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
this is free. This is something you can do. So I love that. I wanted to ask you, what's therapeutic guided imagery? I read that about that on your website and I was very, very intrigued. So I wanted to kind of talk about that.
Yeah. So therapeutic guided imagery is using the power of the mind and imagery to change what's being played in the subconscious mind or to heal what has been maybe harmed that is in the subconscious mind. So it's using that power of an image, a journey, and then going and restoring it and healing it so that it's not playing, I'm not good enough, or I'm the worst anymore. It's now playing a different tune. I am light, or I am good, or I am beautiful, you know, whatever it might be that one is looking for. And it's really powerful because it can work on every level, emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical. And I've seen it affect myself, my children, and clients that I've worked with on every level, right? And it can go and you can use it for absolutely anything as far as inner child work, reframing, seeing bigger pictures, getting answers for questions or problems you might have, you know, when you're trying to make that decision, do I do this job or move here, you know, and your brain is so clouded. What's beautiful about guided imagery is that your soul, your highest self is always guiding you in the process. So what's coming and what's happening and what you might see or feel or hear is exactly what you need. And I love that piece because, it takes a lot of pressure off of me, right? Yeah. As I guide somebody, I know that what they're experiencing is exactly what their soul needs at that moment in that time. It's really great for me. I have to surrender and just let what comes come. And it's a beautiful process as I guide people through these experiences of healing.
I love that. Because our next topic is we're going to talk about letting go.
Yeah.
And a lot of things with trauma, with trials, is that we either don't have the understanding of the picture. So it makes it so that we feel like there's not a conclusion and therefore we can't move past it.
Yeah.
Or we're going through the trials still and, you know, we're still in the anger, you know, the grief cycle of divorce is, you know, you're stuck in anger, you're stuck in denial.
Yeah.
And so you're not able to get past, you know, to that letting go, you know, acceptance mm-hmm. and then moving forward. Mm-hmm. With this therapeutic guided imagery, I mean, is that what it's doing? It's like saying, let's get through this. So there's an understanding, not necessarily like you're not going to understand all the questions because half the time you're not going to know why your husband decided to be a jerk and do this mm-hmm. or your wife, you know, like mm-hmm. you're just not going to have the answers to all your questions. So I just wanted to know, like, is that a really great process of being able to get to that finality of letting go?
Yes, absolutely. So, I've developed kind of my own personal like steps to healing as I've witnessed myself heal and I've witnessed other people's heal from trauma, myself, my own trauma and others. Like you said, the very first and most important part is awareness of those emotions and the thoughts and what's going on and what happened. So becoming aware, right? I spoke with someone not too long ago who has been through a divorce, and I'm like, oh, you know, there's some beautiful things that can help you heal. And she's like, I don't even know that I need healing. Like, what do I need to heal from? And it's like, oh yeah. So if you're not aware, right, then it's not even gonna take you there. You can't necessarily go there. So yeah, a lot of the times, what's beautiful about guided imagery is it's extremely safe. And we cannot process really big, heavy emotions unless we are feeling safe. And unless we are in a trusted relationship with a therapist, a counselor, a friend, an intuitive guide, right? Whatever it might be, safety is the most important part to beginning the whole process. And so I will always guide someone into safety first. And then you can address those emotions that are so big, those thoughts that are so scary, whether it's guilt or shame, like I didn't do enough, or I didn't try hard enough, or it was my fault. Like sometimes those are so big, we can't even face them. But in that setting, this is where we can face them. And then we can see what we actually were needing. Because a lot of the times there's an unmet need, right? And so you can see in your imagery or in your experience in this process, the unmet need, and then you can address it. You can address this unmet need, give yourself the unmet need in whatever way it works. And then that's when this healing begins, right?
Yeah, that's Brené Brown at its finest. And you're just using different words, but vulnerability is the scariest word out there.
Yeah.
And until we're lying flat on our face, you know, the experience, and we're realizing, you know, that we need to be in that position to be able to stand back up. And it's scary. I absolutely agree with you. Like I frankly suck at being vulnerable. Like I'm the tough person. I've got all my crap together. You know, I'm mama four, and sometimes, you know, you wonder why my husband, like sometimes we get into transactional mode where we're like, not even like seeing each other as husband and wife, because we're missing that. I really love it. And I did want to point out, like, I already feel safe with you. Like your voice already makes me feel like I could trust you in, you know, what I needed from you. So, anyways, what you're doing is obviously I can see it and hear it. And your sincerity is really good. When we talk about, you know, how to cultivate gratitude. You can say if this is a different opinion, because I'm not a therapist. My mom's a therapist. She's an LCSW. So I feel like I have a really good grasp on that world and I've done a lot of research with it, but I'm a divorce attorney. So I see things a little bit differently, but gratitude, or being able to see the blessings, whatever you want to say, the good things in your life is so important to carry you through whatever you're going through.
Absolutely.
And Tia Stokes is one of my favorite person. I watch her on her Instagram. She's kind of blown up because she's gone through leukemia and she's a recovering cancer, and she, you know, she's got four kids, like, and she had to be in the hospital all by herself in COVID. And and now her entire Instagram is telling people to be grateful and thankful for what they have. That life sucks. Life throws really bad things. But at the end of the day, there's always beauty or always something you can look at. And I say this all the time to my clients, like, hey, I know this is really bad. Like, I know it's sad that you're not going to see your kids for the first time on Thanksgiving. but you're going to get them all for Christmas, or you're going to get them the day before. And we're going to look at the fact that your kids are going to be fine celebrating Thanksgiving two times, you know? So I'm always like looking for that. So I think it's a really important step that we don't talk a lot about when it comes to healing, progressing, because it's not on the cycles. It's not. So that's just my opinion. What's your thoughts to that stuff?
Yeah. So in my steps to healing, that is my personal steps to healing that I have witnessed, the two most important aspects, I believe, and like you said, are often left off, are forgiveness and gratitude. You can process your emotions and give yourself what you need, but if without that forgiveness and without that gratitude, you may have to go through that experience again because it did not transform you enough to find the good in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Say it again.
That is really, really hard to hear. And I understand, but forgiveness and gratitude, if that's not there at the end of processing your experience and your emotions, you may have to go through that experience again, maybe at a different level, not so big, not so dramatic, but you have to learn from your experiences. I have to learn from my experiences, and I will just continue to cycle in the same pattern until I make the change. And it comes with forgiveness and gratitude. And I've seen it in my own self. I've seen it with clients over and over. We get stuck from a complete healing when we avoid forgiveness and gratitude. And, but that's also because we have the wrong definition of forgiveness and gratitude in our culture, right? Forgiveness is not condoning a behavior, and it's not letting someone get away with it. Forgiveness is actually taking your power back, freeing yourself from somebody, and no longer allowing them to control your emotions or your life or how you respond. and so forgiveness frees you. Gratitude.
I love that. I just want, I'm getting chills over here because I want my listeners to hear that. It's not condoning it. Mm-mm. It's taking your power back. Yes. Anyways, I just want to repeat that. This is so good.
Yes, it is. And, again, I've seen it in guided imagery when people forgive in their setting, in that journey, in that experience, how they retain their essence back. It's so powerful. And then gratitude transforms your experience. It transforms it into a gift. It transforms it into a blessing, and it opens the doors for prosperity. It opens the doors for what you actually want and where you really want to go. Gratitude is so, so powerful. It can cut attachments of criticism and judgment, shame. It'll cut you off from all kinds of self-judgment and shame and comparison, because gratitude brings you back to yourself in your present state and tells you everything is fine.
Yeah.
Because everything is fine. The universe, God, whoever you identify as the source, or whatever you identify as the source, will always support you. You will always be supported.
Yeah.
And when you offer gratitude, you are recognizing you will always be supported. And then you will always be supported. But if you're focusing on what's not there and what's lacking, that grows, that takes over. And all of a sudden you're standing in the weeds, and you're standing it with those tough roots, and they're holding you down, and you're stuck. And the gratitude cuts it back. Gone. Yeah. All those attachments, all those, everything gone.
One of the things too, that I want to talk about is so many people, they're like, I'm thankful for this, but I do not like the word but, because the but is the preposition that you are then making an excuse for why the first part does not matter. You're canceling it out.
Yep.
You can't be grateful with a but.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the buts are the excuses or the building blocks that are building these walls of us from keeping us from moving forward.
Yes.
And so, you know, you might not want to call it that. People don't like to say, I'm making excuses, but that's exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I say that all the time, like, stop making the excuses, because the only person holding you back from moving forward is you. Mm-hmm. Those excuses I hear so many times, I've been a stay-at-home mom. I don't have anything to offer to the world. That's an excuse. That's mm-hmm. bullcrap. I'll go mm-hmm. find you 10 employers that would be just happy to have somebody that understands organization, time management, like a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
But absolutely. The first step is you believing, first of all, in yourself, which is going to get, you know, maybe take some time, because mm-hmm. some of us just innately struggle with self-esteem. You know, we just don't believe we are what we are.
Yeah.
And some of us, you know, like, don't have that issue, but, you know, we can tell you all the time, we think you're great. We think that you have potential, but at the end of the day, we got to do some work on you so you actually believe it.
Yeah. Inner work is very important in this process. That self-love and self-acceptance, for who you are and what you have done, because yeah. whatever it is amazing. I can guarantee it.
Yeah. You have something to offer this world.
Yeah. Everyone does.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, so many people think that my spouse is what's supposed to make me happy. My yeah. marriage is supposed to make me happy. And I'm like, that's bull crap. Mm. I was like, yeah. your marriage isn't making you happy. You make yourself happy. So we have to be working on what we can do to be fulfilled.
Yes.
The first time I went to marriage counseling, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen. My marriage counselor was going to tell my husband what he needed to do to make Jill Coyle happy. And you know what that counselor did? He looked at me and said, Jill, what are you doing to feel fulfilled?
Yeah.
What are you doing to be happy?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? This isn't my problem, right? I quickly realized that if I was going to stand in my marriage and be happy, it needed to come from me first. And then my marriage was just going to elevate.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So we
self-awareness. It's extremely important to be self-aware of your needs and how you can take care of yourself.
Yeah. Yep. And it's hard with us being, especially moms, like working mom, like stay-at-home moms. Like, we're just like, females are just innately bred to just put their head down and take care of everybody else. And to be fair, the patriarchal world has taught us that that was our job.
Yes.
And we need to be breaking that down, because guess what? It's not selfish to take care of yourself. It's not selfish to put your needs first. In fact, that's exactly what every single person should be doing. It's putting yourself first, your needs first, and then, you know, everything else.
And then we can conquer the world. Not quite, but we have a lot more power in helping and serving others when we are balanced and centered ourselves. And yeah. And that's a fact for everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So being grateful.
Yes.
You know, Thanksgiving. I am one of those people that put my Christmas tree up early because mm-hmm. I love Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I tell everybody, they're like, well, why are you skipping Thanksgiving? I was like, no, I am so thankful for Christmas. That's just my reminder that I get to be grateful that Christmas comes, you know, once a time a year, so that I yeah. can think about, you know, the true meaning of Christmas, the spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when we're talking about this and being grateful for the things we have, the things mm-hmm. we can control, mm-hmm. Is really, really empowering. So just kind of some last thoughts on, cultivating gratitude within yourself and your life.
Yeah. Gratitude can begin so simply by just noticing something beautiful. So, the other day we had a hectic morning getting kids to school, and it was a little bit emotional and stressful, and there was tension. And I was doing my best to do my breathing. I had a mantra chanting in my head just to keep myself above the water. I might have gone under the water a little bit and came back up, you know, it's normal. And I got in the car and we're driving to school, and we have a beautiful 30-minute commute to my kids' school. And I looked out and I saw these clouds in the sky, and it was gorgeous. The sun was rising right behind. There's rays everywhere. And I just said, you guys, look at these clouds. Aren't they beautiful? It was so simple, so simple. And it shifted. The tension began to release. My kids then started said, look at that one over there. And mom, do you see that mountain? And for 1 minute, we just noticed the beauty. Okay. There was nothing. I wasn't saying I'm grateful. I'm thankful. I just noticed what was beautiful. And the tension slipped. The stress slipped. And then we started smiling and joy crept back into our little family unit. And by the time we got to work, or by the time I dropped them off to school, we were all connected again, happy, peaceful, joyful. And then I offered my gratitude because I was like, thank you for teaching me that gratitude is noticing just beauty. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't always have to be the laundry list of things I'm grateful for. It's just seeing the color of the flower or those really dark clouds in the sky. Look how beautiful they actually are. And look at the clouds, how they're shaped, you know, and the color of the grass, whatever it might be in your world. Noticing something beautiful will begin the process of gratitude. It'll just open the door. So that's a real simple practice to begin to cultivate gratitude. I also recently posted on my Instagram a practice which has been really great for me, a couple of them. One of them is when you're doing your breath work, right? You inhale and you as you inhale, I notice my body or my mind, or I'm aware of my body. And then as you exhale, I'm grateful for my body. And you say that in your mind, inhale, I am noticing my body and all that it does for me. And then you exhale, I am grateful for my body and all that it's doing for me. And that practice, 3 minutes, again, changes everything. The practice of gratitude will change any outcome for the better, period. So whether you are doing it with the breath, or you're noticing beauty, or you're spending 10 minutes writing everything down you're grateful for, it doesn't matter how you do it, but as you do it, it will change your outcome for the better every single time. Another practice I like is writing down a few things that you do have, right? So if you do have the kids for Thanksgiving, or the day after, or, you know, you do have a car, or you do have a computer, or you have tea, you know, whatever you have, writing down some things you have, and then choosing three of the things you wrote down and diving into those. Why are you grateful? What do they mean to you? How do they help you? This is going to strengthen the gratitude so you can become, again, the word self-aware, aware of what it is that's actually doing for you and how you feel and how it's helping you. That one, you know, is a little more in depth, might take a little more time, but the result will be deeper. It'll be the actual cultivation, the actual growing of gratitude.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I absolutely love that. And we've talked a lot on here, but the power of writing it down is so, it's just great. And it is good reminders. And then it helps us remember it. And then it actually, you know, us putting in the work to think, I am grateful for this. Yes. I am thankful for this. And what better time to do it than in November when Thanksgiving's here and we have a holiday to really remember things that we are thankful for.
Yeah.
Steph, this is amazing. This has been a really just joyful podcast. I would love people to be able to find you. Tell them what's the best way to get a hold of you or to find out who more about what you do.
I have a website, centeredhealingwithstephanie.com. And that is also my Instagram handle. So centeredhealingwithstephanie.com. You can find more information or email, or, you know, I'm happy to answer questions. My job is to help others find healing in themselves and to help them heal themselves. So I'm happy to serve.
Thank you so much. Well,
thank you.
Congrats on what you're doing.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I really appreciate it.
No problem. That's another episode of No One Dies from Divorce, where we're here every week to remind you that whatever you're going through right now, you will be okay. You are strong enough. You are deserving of love. You are deserving of happiness. And we're here to help you remember that every single week. Thank you so much, Steph.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Till next week. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. For listening to this episode, if you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.